curious about the sex life of a mannequin? Well, stay tuned for all the sordid details. Hello, everyone. I'm Lauren Leibowitz, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio and How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. It's Thursday, April 5th, and once again, we are coming to you live from Los Angeles. So happy that you're with us. And we'd love to hear from you, so please give us a call to listen in live, or you can ask questions at 347-857-2710. And you can also email us here at the studio at goodvibeexperience@gmail.com. We're up for a good vibe today, and I hope you are too. Again, that number to call in to listen or to ask questions is 347-857-2710. And as I mentioned just a few minutes ago, you probably have above your head that idea bubble, and you're thinking, seriously, Lauren, do mannequins really have sex? Well, my guest today will unlock the many mannequin mysteries. He began his career as a visual artist at the young age of 16. His first gig was at Nordstrom's, working as a men's trimmer. And from there, he became a member of the visual merchandising team at Saks Fifth Avenue. He is the principal designer of his very own visual display business, CM Square Designs, and industry professionals have hailed him as the best window dresser in Los Angeles. We only get the best here at How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. So please, welcome to the show a very creative and talented soul, Chad Michael Morissette. Hi, Chad Michael.
Hi. Hello. How are you? It's great
to
be here.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure because I've always admired windows. I mean, as a kid, you know, walking down a major thoroughfare in a major city, no matter where you are, and especially in New York City, especially at the holidays, the windows are amazing, and it brings many people to see the displays and the stories that these displays do tell. But I read a recent article where you said that creating window displays is a delicate balance. What did you mean by that, and how do you manage the balance?
Well, I think I was talking about it's a delicate balance in you know, there's always less is more, or more is too much, or a lot of times with an art, there's a fine line between doing something that is provocative or offensive or not. So in creating, I think you run into that a lot, and window dressing is the same type of situation. Sometimes there's a thin line between something that a client may like or something that I personally may like or something that I don't or that a client doesn't. It is a creative process, and anyone who's involved in the creative process, I think, would have an understanding of that a little bit.
Absolutely, but I see that you really do kind of push an emotional button. Your designs have been are so creative. How do you go about deciding what to create in the window?
It just depends. I mean, sometimes it's pure inspiration that just pops into my head for no reason at all. Inspiration always sings, it never explains. I think it's one quote I've read. And then other times it's very specific. It's, you know, seasonally driven, or it's by the calendar or by a designer or something. So the inspiration can come from other places. But then once I have the idea of what the story, if you will, is going to be, a lot of my inspiration comes from my army of mannequins. And they, the poses that they have help me to tell the story that I'm trying to create. And the more expressive a pose, the more interesting or elaborate or subtle the story can be. Because so much of their pose, I mean, being that they are human sculpture, and when you're dealing with ones that are realistic, which I use a lot, you're dealing with something that looks just like a human being. And the poses that they have can be very full of attitude or excitement or expression or sass or anything you're looking for. So a lot of the creation starts with which mannequin am I going to use? What pose am I looking for? What am I trying to evoke in people?
Well, As I mentioned, a lot of the window displays don't use a lot of human-like mannequins anymore. I don't even know. It's still a mannequin, but just maybe a body form, a headless
mm-hmm.
body form, and you have a collection of over 300 mannequins. So because you just mentioned there's a personality, how do you go about selecting the kind of mannequin that you're going to use for your display?
You know what, I go through phases of finding and researching the mannequins that I have, but lately I've been really into odd and crazy poses, and that having more of those helps me to create these stories. Like, for example, I'm working on a project where I wanted to make it look like we're doing a spring window, and the theme is spring fling, and I wanted to make it look like there's a human in a giant slingshot. But I have to have a very specific... Yeah, this guy's going to be pulling this girl back, and she's going to be flung on a giant slingshot. But I need something that fits that. I can't use something that's just standing there. I have to have something that has the appropriate pose. So I go down and I look at
my mind. Do you remember the scene on Sex and the City where Samantha goes to this guy's house, and you know they were talking about getting tested for AIDS because, you know, she really wants to have sex with this guy, and she opens the apartment door, and she sees the swing, you know, that's on the chain with the leather seat. And when you said slingshot, that visual came to mind.
Yeah, well, that would be the fine line of doing something provocative or sticking to the slingshot.
Well, don't you find, I find that a lot of retail stores do not take advantage of the window space that they have. They don't. It's very static and not emotional.
I compare it a lot to opera in the sense that unless you know about this art form, you could go your whole life and never even see it, because it's I don't want to say it's dwindling, because it is still there, but it is not what it used to be. It's not what it was in the 70s and 80s. And retailers don't use the same type of creativity anymore to get people's attention. And like you said, you have this pastime. I think something in America we all have, it's called a pastime of window shopping. And it doesn't even have to be a pastime. We still do it. We walk by and we're always looking in the windows. And now we are missing what, you know, generations before used to look at and fantasize, and it's so much a part of consumer culture, and to not have it there is sad to me. I wish that people did more of it.
Well, let me ask you this. Is it an expensive proposition to have someone like yourself come in and design a window display? Is that a reason? Does it cost?
That's a big reason. Costs were some of the first reasons that we started seeing mannequins that aren't realistic, because the face paint costs more, and it costs more to keep them up, and so they started turning them into high-gloss white mannequins because it's easy to keep clean, and headless mannequins because it costs less to not have a head on. So I think cost is a huge deciding factor in the reality of window dressing today, for sure.
Well, I have to go with your art form, because I think a lot of businesses are short-sighted, and I know you have to cut back somewhere, but...
Yep.
Window display is a form of advertising. And so if you have people walking in front of your shop, your store, you have a specific audience. So why not use something that will entice them to come into the store?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's tried and true. It works. It's just for some reason it's been brushed away a little bit by what mainstream retail, if you will, nowadays. But
yeah,
I always try and tell my clients, think of it like a magazine ad or a billboard that's right on the face of your store. I mean, you get to advertise in this space. And when they start to understand that, they get a little more excited and they do a lot more fun things.
Well, they have a captivated audience, whereas if you spent, let's say, the same amount of money in a print form, you know the readership of a magazine, but you don't have their attention right then and there. It's as if somebody's on the inside of the window tapping on the outside saying, hey, come on inside.
Look over here. Yeah, look at this.
Look at this. We're selling sex on the third floor. Or
yeah, you could have this lifestyle.
Exactly. And I know we have a mutual friend, Keith Dillon, who is also a visual display artist, and he does a shop here in Los Angeles and for many years. And his work also tells a wonderful story, depending on what the owner of the shop is looking for. And I'm sure you get the same kind of comments. It stops traffic. Because, you know, people are at a light and you're looking around while you're waiting for the light to change or whatever, and you see the various businesses on the street, and you happen to see something that catches your eye, which is a window. So you're encouraged to either maybe drive by the street more often or go inside to the store.
Oh, I'm sure there are people driving by Keith's windows and my windows that never even go in the store. They just drive by because they like to look at the beautiful creation that's right there, because it's so different than what you see next to the other stores. It definitely, I think people become regulars, and it makes me so happy when I'm actually out on the street and I may be looking at my work or tweaking something from the outside to see the pedestrians that are walking by stop dead in their tracks and look at it. I think there's nothing more validating for me than someone to just stop and look at it. It means that I've kind of accomplished my goal in getting attention.
Well, you stopped and you made someone think and and become aware of something, because I think, I don't know if it's generally around the country, but probably so to some extent, that we're so unaware nowadays with, we're so in touch with technology that we don't necessarily, when we do have an opportunity to walk down the boulevard, so to speak, to really notice and become aware of what's around us.
Yeah, it's true. And we're kind of plugged into technology, and we're also bombarded with visual stimulation when we're on the street. You know, part of my challenge is what am I going to do to get someone to turn their head to look at this particular brand or store, you know, because you're either looking at your phone or you're looking at 10,000 other, you know, pieces of information that are coming at you as you drive and walk down the street. So how do we get them to stop? So when they do, it's fun. And even here in LA, you know, it's not New York where everyone is walking, but everybody's in their car stuck at a red light and they're definitely looking around, you know. And we kind of have built-in audiences in L.A. because they're stuck in their vehicles and they're kind of required to look around every now and then.
That's
and
truly that's captivating an audience, right?
Yeah. And I'm always very excited when I get a client that's near a bus stop or a traffic light, because I know that there is certain minutes every 10 minutes or so where people are pretty much guaranteed to be looking at the space.
Well, that's obviously a great sales technique also, to entice a prospective client to say, this is how many people will stop and see your work. So what do you think, what is it that you do in your window display that would encourage people to not only come into the boutique but to buy, to increase sales?
That is the age-old question. And just last September I was on a panel of people at the visual merchandising, it was the IRDC, International Retail Design Conference, and the subject of the conference or the seminar we were a part of was, how do you measure your return on investment through visual display? And I always tell my new clients from the get-go, there is nothing I can do that is going to guarantee sales. The space that I deal with is the advertising space, and as soon as that person walks through the door, which I can get them to walk through the door, and I can get them to look at the store. I can get them to take pictures of the window. I can get people to pop their head in and say, I love this. But I can't get them to buy something. I can get them interested in your brand. I can get them dreaming that they're worth that.
Yeah, but you did accomplish your goal, because your goal is to get them in the store. It's to get their attention and get them in the store. Yeah.
And then that's what I tell them, is the salespeople are the ones who have to take it from there. Their skill is, well, hi, welcome, let me show you what we have, or, you know, wasn't the window great? Let me show you where the piece is. But if I can get them into that door frame, then I know that's what I can guarantee you. Or if I can get you attention and some publicity where people know your window because of what they're seeing, then I've reached my goal in aiding them in what their bottom line is, which is sales.
Well, obviously.
It's very hard to relate the two. It really is. I wish I could say, I guarantee you if you hire me, you will have sales go out the roof. You know, I wish I could.
But obviously from what you're telling me, your work does have an impact on people. That's why mm-hmm. they are compelled to cross that threshold and say, mm-hmm. wow, cool, wow, that made me angry, or mm-hmm. who does it? So you're stirring things up inside, and that's all you can be expected, because that was your role. You're creating,
yeah.
as I like the way you coined it, it's street theater.
Mm-hmm. It's street theater. I really, and I'm glad to hear you say that specifically, because I really, part of what I want to accomplish with my career is to bring back visual display to a certain degree, but I want it to really, truly be seen as street art, the same way that people who go around and do incredible displays kind of guerrilla style, it's the same kind of street art, because it's on the street and it's in front of people's faces and it's relevant to pop culture and there's messages and there's tongue-in-cheek and there's... So it really is street theater, because it is literally on the street as you're out there.
It's a perfect opportunity to tell a story. What an mm-hmm. audience. All different walks, people from
Everybody.
Different walks of life.
I mean,
that's priceless.
Yeah.
Now, have you ever thought about using live models? I am available, you know.
Oh, perfect. I have used live models. That's an old trick. It's typically not used very often, because when you're behind a pane of glass and the sun is shining, you begin to feel like an ant. It gets so hot in those windows. But when you have a special event, or you have typically, a special event is where you would put live models in the window. So if you have a surplus of people in the boutique or something that night, you could replace the mannequin with a real person. And people love it. They always love it. And this last summer, I did a float. I was actually hired to do a couple floats for AIDS Healthcare Foundation, who owns Out of the Closet. And I incorporated mannequins on the float, and I had people pretending to be mannequins, and then they would move. So some of them looked like they were moving, and some of them didn't move because they were actually mannequins, but people really got a kick out of that too.
Wow, that's great.
Which is the same kind of principle.
That's wonderful. So how did you come to do visual display? What brought you to this career?
It's just, you know, I think I'm being guided through my life by amazing spirit guides or angels or somebody, because a lot of things I have lady luck on my side. I didn't have any ambition or intention to become a display artist, but at 16, I was kind of sucked into a vortex. And a lot of times in my life, I feel like that happens, where I'm just supposed to go down a certain route, and I trust and I follow, and it's led me to where I'm at today. But at 16 years old, I was working at Nordstrom, and I wasn't hired in the visual department, but an opening opened, and I applied, and I got it, and same type of thing at Saks. I was still so young, but they saw how well I could iron a shirt and a suit and pin it to the form and tie a tie, that they just hired me right on the spot. So that was the beginning. That's where I trained. That's where I got my understandings of the certain principles, because I did not go and study this anywhere. I didn't go to a design school.
Is there a place to study visual design, or is it just kind of on the job? You obviously have an innate creative side, and just by working in the environment where you learn your skill. But is there a school you go to?
There are lots of schools that people go to study what they call visual communications, VCOM, and other related parts of this industry. But locally in Los Angeles is FIDM, the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising, but there's FIT in New York. I mean, there's schools throughout the country that do teach, but I work with lots of interns from the schools who come and work with me on job training, and half the time they tell them what they're learning in schools, not what they're learning with me. So the on the job is very different than what you can be taught in a school. And I, like you said, I think so much of it is born into you, your creativity. So I think it can be fine-tuned, but I don't think it could necessarily be taught, you know.
No, well, your ability, and I applaud you, because I think we all have the inner voice. We all feel, whatever we want to call it, we're guided, our little angels or you know, that intuition, that sometimes that voice is so soft that we don't hear it. And
mm-hmm. yeah.
when you can say, yep, okay, I'm ready to go on the ride, let's play and have some fun, and mm-hmm. your life begins to unfold, and it's easy, meaning one thing leads to another.
Yes.
It just
yes.
unfolds, and you think, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, yes. I feel very much like that has been a large part of my career path unfolding for me. It's just trusting it and watching it unfold and being really happy about it.
That's terrific. So let's get to the nitty-gritty. I mean, how many hours does it take for you to create one of your fabulous window displays?
Well, you know what? It takes days of production to get these things, to get them together. And it's beginning to take more and more time because I used to outsource a lot of my repair or building, but I'm doing a lot of it in-house now. And just for example, I booked a theme today, the spring fling that I was telling you about. And now I've got to sand 3 mannequins down and get them painted. And that takes at least a day a mannequin. I mean, at least. So the production side of it is where gathering and creating and resourcing and putting it all together takes the most time. But then when you're actually in the window, and if you've done all the preparation that you're supposed to do, the installation can typically just be a day. The installation, of course, is the funnest part. That's when you get to see the idea, you know, the thought that was just in the brain translate into the 3D and actually become reality. So
yeah.
that's the funnest part for me. The production and the painting and all that stuff is the blood, sweat, and tears. But once you're in and you're building and it's that last day and you get to put the style on it, your own little personal tweaks, those are the best fun part.
Well, I kind of liken to what you do to those that are set designers and decorators, where
mm-hmm.
the curtain is closed and you're about to tell a story. And so, you know, you paint the walls, you find the mannequin, you dress them, you make it them, you position them, just like you were saying. And then the curtains come off, the lights go on, and now the play begins.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
and because we're all visual people, I mean, I know I am. I mean, if you use all your five senses, being visual is just so important. I mean, it resonates with me especially. So when you see something and then you feel that message, it just
yeah.
can't help but want to, you know, haul your little derriere into that place and say, wow, that was fabulous. What was
yeah.
that?
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people just come in and say, you guys have the best windows. It's just so nice. So even if the visual representation hasn't inspired the sale, even though it's affected someone, like you said earlier, it's made them take notice and come in and say something. I even think the people working in the stores are inspired by that. I'm like, wow, that's so cool out there that they just came in to tell us how cool it is. Like, it's neat to see it affect so many different people, the visual aspect of what I do.
Well, I think in a lot of
visual people.
In a lot of businesses, the beginning of that experience starts from the outside. Let's say you go to a restaurant and there's a valet. How you mm-hmm. perceive your dining experience begins with how the valet greets you.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're right.
So as a visual display artist, you're that valet. You're that, well, you know, this is Saks Fifth Avenue. Let me show you what's on the third floor. Or here's
yep.
what we're doing in menswear. So this is just a little tease. I'm not going to give it all to you. So why don't you come on in and
yeah.
have a look around. So
yeah.
you're an experienced designer, because that's just seeing some of your work online. That's what you're creating, is an experience. For someone, and how wonderful is that you're touching people's hearts and souls and minds, and yes, maybe it's controversial and you'll stir someone up to say, well, I don't care for that, but it doesn't
yeah.
matter what happens, you're still creating a little fire.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's something that I really enjoy, is because I don't work for just one corporation now, because I am able to work for different brands, it keeps me on my toes, because I have to come up with different ways to touch people that are specific to each brand. And each brand is different. So one brand may have a message that they want crafted like this all the time, and another one, you know, may be very serious and beautiful, and the other one may be a little bit more irreverent and fun. So it keeps me on my toes because I'm not just doing the same thing for the same brand, and I really enjoy that. I get to you know, market to all kinds of people. I don't get to just do one thing. And that's fun. That's more fun, I think.
Well, and also you bring all of that diversity to the next client.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are able to decipher what it is that they're looking for, and so now you have all these tools that you bring with you to create whatever it is that will be beneficial for their specific store.
Yeah, their message, exactly.
Their message. Yeah. What would you say was the most outrageous display you've ever designed?
Oh, wow. Well, I have done a few outrageous.
Ah!
But one that I found incredibly exhilarating and kind of liberating was I one time did a window display advertising the re-release of Helmut Newton's book Sumo, which I think originally was like 15 years ago it came out or something. It's the biggest book ever published, like in size and weight. And then they released a smaller version of it. And on the cover is a very famous image of a beautiful model standing naked in just a pair of high heels, and her hands are down below her waist. And I have a mannequin in the same pose. So I put the mannequin in the window, and she was naked. And we even put pubic hair on her, just like the model. So revealing nudity like that in, you know, in people's faces was almost like being naked in front of people. Like it was, that was one that I think really turned heads.
I'm sure.
But
I'm
there
sure
was a big giant poster of the book right behind us. So it was like you're seeing a two-dimensional version and then you see the three-dimensional version. So it was a pretty cool one. I think that one was exhilarating just because of the subject matter.
Yeah, I think you woke up a lot of people with that one.
Yeah.
Well, I want to give out your contact information because I can't believe that 30 little minutes go by so quickly here when we have a very enlightening and very interesting guest as yourself. So people can go to your website, cmsquareddesigns.com, or
yes,
contact you via Twitter at O Mannequin, which is O-H Mannequin.
Yes, oh mannequin.
Oh mannequin, baby, oh mannequin. Chad Michael, you are so delicious and so delightful. Thank you so much for sharing your talents. And
thank you for being interested. I had a blast. I'm glad we were able to do this. I think we've tried for quite a while, and it's been the perfect timing. So
yes,
I was happy to be here.
My pleasure. Anytime you want to come on and talk about you and your creativity, it's my pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Chad Michael Morissette, visual artist, designer of CM Square Designs. You can contact Chad Michael at cmsquaredesigns.com or Twitter him at omannequin, at O-H mannequin. Thank you for joining us today on another Unwild and Crazy Journey in Someone Else's Shoes next week when my guest will be elder law attorney Mitchell A. Karazov. This is Lauren Leibowitz, and thank you so much for joining me today and listening to How to Be Comfortable in Your Own Shoes. We'll see you next time, and I look forward to helping you find comfort in your own shoes. We're going to leave you with Keith Chagall and Flight of the Monarchs.